What's up? Welcome to Sweathead with Mark Pollard. I have Yanni Westcott, 20 plus years in the industry, many of those years doing strategy, insight, and research work. Yanni, welcome.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me.
We got a good chunky topic today. I've talked to a lot of people about ageism in the industry and various isms in the industry, but you've got a little thing going where you specifically focus on helping young people get strategy jobs, and then once they have them, potentially promotions in a strategy role or a strategy department. So that's what we're going to talk about today, and I'm excited to talk about it because it's not just any young person that you focus on, is it?
No, I started with women of color, and I've moved from there to include some guys of color also. I came up in the music industry like you did, Mark.
It's true.
My first job at a college was at a record store, and the 90s were a rich time in music, and one of the best albums ever was Public Enemy's Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, ain't that the truth? Because whose kids come through the door for the internships every year? It's the partners and the EVP's kids and their friends and the friends of their friends. And I was just reflecting on that one year, looking at our internship pool. I was like, what the hell? There is so much talent out there that we have no idea about. And in the agency world, we are supposed to be the beacon of innovation. We are supposed to be, you know, at the forefront of progressive thought. And what are we doing when we're hiring?
It's a weird, funny, strange thing. I mean, internships, I think, around the world now are a thing. They weren't as much of a thing for me in Australia growing up. They're probably more of a thing now. And I do remember in my time in the New York agencies, I'd been in leadership or management situations, and I would see very senior people high-fiving each other. I think I actually saw someone high-five each other, not just like emotionally and metaphorically, but I think I saw a little bit of a high-five and a compliment. Like, how did you get that kid from that rich family in? And like, by rich, I'm talking Fortune 500 type situations. And they're like congratulating each other because they think it's going to lead to more work and various other things. And at the same time, you'll hear stories about they bring in someone from one of these super wealthy backgrounds and they're problematic. And they're like, oh, we just put them in this room and, you know, they needed an assistant. So we got them an assistant. This is like someone who's still at college. And it's weird. You hear these stories, but I don't know. It's just like, what on earth is going on and how long does it get to go on for? And thank goodness Yanni is out there helping people.
So to finish the inspiration for this story, it started with Public Enemy, but one day I got an invitation to go to Bobby Brown's makeup counter to get my makeup done. And I was like, could I make this a work networking opportunity? Guys go to games all the time. They golf all the time. They have these conversations that sound like Greek to me about sports. And they get to show their smarts and they get to show their passion and they get to have this kind of moment of, it's networking, right? And shared passion with all sorts of levels of men. And it was Greek to me.
Yeah. I don't even relate to what you're talking about. Like having grown up with a single mom and having felt like an outsider, increasingly I'm aware that I'm an increasingly middle-aged white guy who I realize like, oh, I know a lot of people now, but my introvert mentality is like, I'm by myself all the time, even though I've been with the same person for 23 years and have kids in the same household. This weird thing inside. So I hear you talking about these things, and I never really, it's Greek to me as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that there just feels like there's an in and there's an other a lot in the professional world. So I was just thinking on, can I take a colleague or somebody I would want to network with to get our makeup done? And even saying now it sounds trivial. And so I did some, like a researcher that I am, I went on LinkedIn and I asked professional friends, guys, how do you guys figure out the greens fees? How do you guys figure out who pays for what? Because somebody's like the makeup counter situation is a money situation.
Right.
And there's stuff you do yourself and there's stuff you do together, right? Similar. You could have some wine. And the golf situation is like that too. There's like stuff you do yourself and stuff you do together, and except for you're outside. That's where the analogy stops. So I found out that usually the more senior person pays, but the junior people, those that aren't necessarily in the club, do other things. They pay for beers, they tip the caddy, they, you know, help with other things. So I scratched the Bobby Brown idea and I started a mentoring practice I call Nail Your Interview. And it starts with a person who's interested in a job. You get me the specs for that job. You give me your resume. We talk about how to take apart the specs for that job, which is basically like the RTBs, and back it into the themes of your person that they need. So like they need somebody who can work on SaaS, Excel, and a social listening platform. And I back that out to like they need somebody who's resourceful and a quick start, right? Mm. You know, like they can figure things out and they're resourceful. And then I get the person to be able to tell their stories confidently to the themes of the objectives of what this kind of what could seem like a insurmountable list of must-haves in the job specs. I get them to tell their stories in an authentic way, like in a confident way and legit way. You might not have exactly that whole list of RTBs, but you've got the skills to get you there. And then right before the interview, we get our nails done together.
I like that. And that there is something, sometimes I feel like, and this is exactly what you're trying to do, that sometimes we see a job specification and we feel we have to obey it and be perfect before we can apply. And I apparently from some of the research, there are gender differences and you're like, what? Look, the research does suggest, I think, that white men tend to not worry as much about the details. But what you're doing is very strategic. And it's kind of philosophical because what you're saying is look at the patterns here, extract a theme, and then apply your honest, real experience to that theme. And by essentially saying, here's how I understand what you need, here's what I think this means, and here's what I'm really good at. And you're kind of pulling, you're not obeying the job description. You're creating a different kind of conversation, which is a very good way to persuade someone of something.
Yeah. Yeah. My dream for these people when they're done with this little process is that they can sit on the same side of the table as the person who's interviewing them and show them something that's in their passion media. And sometimes it's stories, sometimes it's data, sometimes it's pictures. I've got a photographer I was working with, so that they can demonstrate the virtues of the person that they want.
Yeah.
In a medium that's really comfortable for them.
Yeah. And true to their experience, there's extremely intelligent, initially a planner and copywriter who goes by the name of Jeannie, who's a drag queen currently in Southeast Asia, has appeared on television shows there and has a very big role with Vice / Virtue there. And it was really interesting because Jeannie would talk about, Jeannie went to VCU Brand Center and then was very strong in saying that I'm drag queen and these are the benefits of it. And Jeannie wanted people and agencies to self-select. And it's really interesting because I talked to so many people who feel apologetic, for example, of maybe having worked in a record store or have been a DJ or having been a DJ or, I mean, way more complex and interesting things and those things as well.
Yes.
And like, I can't really talk about those things. You know, I worked on a cruise ship for a year. Or I did this or did that. It's like, no, they're the things. They are the things that make you interesting. You just got to work out how to tell a story around it. Do you have that kind of interaction with people where maybe even though you've established some kind of intimate relationship with them, you still have to draw out from them the things that really turn them on?
Yes. And permission to be excited about what they're excited about. Because when somebody can light up about what turns it on for them, they are automatically more valuable and more attractive than they were when they're trying to recite to you what they think you want to hear. And I've got this guy I'm working with, and he does a form of dance. It's not capoeira. It's a different, but it's like capoeira, like dance martial arts, super duper strong. And he uses movement to get to innovation. He uses it in small groups to get to ideas. And it's absolutely brilliant. Not only does it, like, it's bravely self-selecting who your client is, which I love, you know, like, not everybody's going to go for this. But it's also talking about how, like, centered and completely unique this guy is. He's taken, you know, Latin dance now so that he can meet the girls. But, like, yeah, keep going, right? Keep at it.
And are the people that you've mentored, how are they finding out about you?
I just opened up the practice on Girls' Day. Do you know about Girls' Day?
But feel free to tell me about it.
Girls' Day is a advertising platform or community for women. Mm-hmm. Started in Chicago, and I posted it there. And got my first clients just organically that way. And I'm in the process of, like, writing up the actual process and giving it away, because I want everybody in the world doing this. Mm. It's like an idea that should spread. There's certain things that you do in a certain order. It's just like strategy to unlock the stories in these people and the confidence in the truth of those stories, and then really nail it with them. Like, I mean, I help them with actual lines on how you start to ask somebody out to coffee. Like, can you remember how hard that was when you were first coming up? It was so hard. You'd write the sentence over and over again. Does Tuesday work for you? No, that sounds too robotic. Anytime next week is cool. Well, that's too ambiguous. Like, you know, I help them with that sort of stuff. Just the simple sentences for getting relationships started that you really want to start. Did that answer your question, my friend?
Yeah. Let's talk about it. Because it's funny hearing words like story, and part of what you're doing is playing with someone's script and the script that they use
yes.
to describe themselves and how they interact. And it's just, in some ways, it's really unfortunate that a word like story or storytelling has become so vague and nothing. In the industry, you know, you have massive conferences that, and I'm not talking about the conferences that use storytelling in the title, because some of those are actually really good. But, you know, someone who's been in the industry for 20 years gets up and goes, "We're in the business of storytelling." Yeah. Every year, no one's ever thought of it. And like, they're the first person to have thought of it. And it's like, what? But the thing is, it's about, and possibly a more useful thing to connect it to rather than this advertising puffery around storytelling is stories are the myths and the histories that we keep in our heads that run through us and are basically our operating system. And what I see your work being about is, how do you bring out some of those stories that could have more impact? And then what are the ways to communicate with people to get those stories out into the world where they can benefit from them to get more stories? There's something beautiful about it, but I just feel like the advertising industry and the these kind of grandstanding, we're in the business of storytelling things, it's like, duh. It's done a sort of harm to this idea.
Right. Well, so script is a very useful construct. Think about going into any QSR, McDonald's, or, you know, even a Walgreens. You know how to move through that space. Well, you're young and coming up. You don't know how to move through this space. And then you add the other layer of otherness, right, of being a person of color or thinking that this world is not for you, it's for other people. And you've got another barrier of script. So, you know, just practicing these dance moves or these words and getting really comfortable with them, understanding that when you sound natural, nobody's scared for you. Mm-hmm. and they good people want to, you know, meet you, mm-hmm, right where you are. It's practice and, you know, a few nudges, but it's been really rewarding. Like, not only jobs, but like increases in salary, you know, negotiating through a tough thing at work, you know, just really, really, really rewarding.
Yeah. I mean, you might as well help people before you disappear, right? At some point, it becomes about other people. But it's funny because just to talk a little bit more about the story thing, you know, when I've talked to people in who are trying to work out how to get in, sometimes you're just sitting with them and they start to talk in a very formulaic way and they start to parrot some corporate language back. And you know, I'll be like, who am I talking to right now? You just changed how you were talking to me. And then they'll keep going. And essentially, if you're mentoring someone, you're like, tell me a different story. Tell me the other story. No, the other story. Oh, what? You're like into dance, martial arts and salsa and bowling and you sing and you draw and you, oh, tell me that story. That's the story I want. And it's kind of funny to think about that interaction, which is kind of what mentoring is partly about. It's not always about the mentor giving specific advice. It's like, no, just say it differently or give me the other thing that you were talking about before. And people are like, oh, I'm allowed to do that? Yeah.
Right. And stupid little tricks, Mark, like smile when you're on the phone.
Oh, are you doing it right now?
Totally. It just helps. It really helps. It makes you sound more, you know, open and natural. So particularly when you go through things like, so many of their interviews now are, there's 5 interviews on the phone before they even get to see somebody in person. Keeping that fresh, keeping present with that is hard. I don't envy the gauntlet that young kids have to go through now. I really don't.
Yeah. And I mean, that's part of the reason why I've nearly always tried to create things and put them into the world. So I didn't have to kind of go through that gauntlet because I think I'm personally okay with it and have been okay with it. And I know this interview is not about me, but I'm just trying to relate. And I've just found it more powerful to put things into the world so that we can at least talk. Can we talk about the thing that we did? That I did. And again, for what it's worth, I did not really talk about doing a hip hop magazine until I was about 28. I just was like, that doesn't seem relevant to what we're doing. Some people would know, but also people would make silly like gang seat signs at me in Sydney. And you're like, stop being so patronizing. 10 years later, they're all into it. But, you know, I kept that part of myself hidden for what it's worth. And I'm not equating totally different growing up situations. What are some of the other key challenges that people are facing as far as getting interviews in the first place and then also getting through the interviews?
Sure. I mean, just plain old introductions to somebody who works there or somebody who's in a similar category or situation at another agency. So I make, in addition to helping them with their stories, I make very strategic introductions. I help them figure out what they're asking and what stories they're bringing to those people. And then their network just spreads. Now, they have to show up to these networking opportunities prepared. They have to have done their homework because I don't waste my, you know, networking mojo on somebody who's just going to show up and not be leaning forward. So that's another thing that I do is I was like, okay, if you want to work in this agency on this brand, I can introduce you to 2 people who used to work on it and a couple of people who are still at the agency, but now work on other brands. And so that they can, in safe places, start practicing.
I'm not super fond of a networking opportunity. It's rare that I even ask to network. I just like to create myself. But like, what's a good use of a networking opportunity? I know you mentioned being prepared, but like, what's the point of a networking opportunity? What's a reasonable expectation that someone could have going into them for the first time?
Sure. So I will introduce a young planner on the East Coast to a mid-level planner on the East Coast. And I'll say, you're going to ask he or she about how they got their first job. And you're going to take notes on the things that they did. And we're going to talk about that the next time. I mean, I try to make it really specific so it doesn't feel like we're just getting to know each other. And then I also try to get them to practice a story or two. So now you're, in addition to asking them about this, you're going to tell them about how you pivoted from pharmacy school to advertising and your traditional Indian family went berserk, you know, and you're going to connect on that human level with this particular human that I've put you in touch with.
So, I love that because the first part of that, you know, this one, I'm just pointing it out. Like the first part of that is turning the networking opportunity into study. Like you're going there to study this person. It's very philosophical, very Socratic in that the job is to come back and we're going to talk about some of the first principles at play here. Things that you might have a very different life to the person that you're interviewing with or that you're talking with, but we're going to talk about the principles that you could apply to your life. And that's an amazing way to learn.
Yeah. I mean, really, Mark, it comes down to asking interesting questions, which is the job number one of a strategist. And then job number two is having disciplined thinking. And so then they practice that. Mm. Like those are the frameworks that there's kind of like starter behaviors and attributes of somebody who can do those things. So that's why I start with like, you're resourceful, you're curious, you're relentless, right? You're those sorts of things. And then we get down to, okay, no, you're logical and you're strategic in the way that you ask questions. You're headed somewhere. It's deductive. And so I'm teaching, like that's the whole idea, teaching the craft while I'm showing somebody that they have it inside them already. And then not only that, like I'm also like, and now you're going to go borrow and steal every single framework ever and change your cases into those frameworks and see which one lets you tell the story the best.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your point of view on CVs, especially for people coming up who might not necessarily get direct access to the person who might hire them, especially in a large company? I'm imagining someone trying to get into a large building in Chicago, for example, where there's an army of HR people you've got to go through first. You know, what's the role of a CV? How does someone create a CV that reflects who they want to be rather than just parrots things back that are in that job spec? Or is that a misdirection?
Well, I think that the sort of freedom that you're talking about not just parroting back is not really for the entry level person who's in a vulnerable space. I think that, and then furthermore, I also think that you've got to teach to the form. The resume is a form and it should be, I respect it. I expect it to be perfect. I expect it to be professional. I expect it to have a certain type of tone. I'm old-fashioned about some things. I still write a research proposal all the way out. I still, if I want to hire somebody and I think that we should be hiring a certain person, I write that whole argument all the way out. These are the things that I do and it's, call me old-fashioned. The resume, I think, is basically, you know, I call it a Jungian construct of you because they're all the same, but they're singular and they should be perfect and they should be professional. And I think they're important. I just talked a planner with like 3 to 5 years through updating her resume. And it, you know, with writing, it's just so humbling. You've got to send that stuff to an editor. I don't care how good you are. There's M dashes and N dashes that are mixed up. And when this piece of paper gets put into the middle of that, you know, Brazil-like, now I'm talking about the movie, you know, big corporation, they are looking for a reason for it to be thrown out. So you can't give them that reason. So that's my theory on CVs. I think that as I got older, it got less important.
Yeah.
But when I was the first 5 years, man, it was super duper important.
Yeah, it is. And also, I think it's also important to believe that a CV doesn't exist in isolation. And that if you have created things, if you do have a portfolio, that, and if you do know someone who could recommend you, it's that combination that creates a sense of power. I know that if, you know, I've read a lot of CVs over the years, and if I see a page of just 3 to 5 syllable words next to each other, it's a real turn off for strategy roles. However, someone in HR, maybe that's what they look for. I often get nervous that I'm going to misdirect people. Because the other thing is, like, there is a lot of folklore around back in the day, especially with strategy roles, that often ahead of planning, even with a team of 10 to 20 people, they would catch up with people for, well, Australia and England, it's probably for a beer or for a coffee. And they're like, yeah, okay, we could work together. Do you want a job? And so there's, but in the meantime, I feel like all this stuff's become way more corporate, way more factory-like. There are way more opinions involved. And the systems slow down. HR people aren't always accountable for getting back to people after they've interviewed and all this. It would probably be, I feel, for people coming in right now, it's unnecessarily complicated and difficult for so many.
Yeah. And, you know, young Black and brown men and women do not have that access of familiarity for the coffee, for the, they just don't. So in the meantime, their piece of paper has to be bulletproof, and then they get, you know, then they go from there. It's hard.
Okay. So let's say they get through that gauntlet run, and that gauntlet run is weird at many levels. I mean, that you hear stories of people a few years in these roles who might visit a city like a Chicago or New York for an interview, and all of a sudden that interview turns into 5 people in the room, or there's like 5 half-hour interviews back to back that weren't planned for. You know, the point is, I think the industry could do a way better job of finding people and bringing them in. And honestly, if you're a leader, if you're a manager, maybe HR and your internal recruiters don't need to be as involved as you think they do. And maybe you're doing it to make yourself feel important. I'm going to leave that little nugget there. Once someone's in, what kinds of conversations are you having with people about getting those promotions?
Sure. Once they're in, to me, it's just like head down, say yes, ask for examples, and ask for help. If you don't feel like you can ask for help there, ask for help from me. You know, like I stay with these people and we'll get you through whatever kind of sticky assignment or tricky interpersonal thing that you're going through, because they happen every single day.
Yeah.
I am 20 years into this job, and every single time I get a new assignment, I'm terrified. Mm-hmm. Because it's hard, and you're doing it from every single thing's new. Like, I have comfort in the fact that I have seen a lot of industries and categories, but that doesn't mean that I know what the answer is yet. And that's what's scary about the work that we do. So I stay in touch. I tell them to ask for examples of what was good before. And you can always, you know, figure out the elements of what was good before and make it better. And then you just say yes. You just say yes to everything for like the first 3 years. I reflect a lot with the newly hired strategists on why their account counterparts in particular are getting promotions every single time, mm-hmm. every single year, and you're not. And I tell them that we stay where we are on our bands longer, but we always give advice up. We give advice up in terms of client status. We give advice up in terms of importance and visibility of the work. So it's like you're kind of always punching above your weight, even if you're still starting out. Mm-hmm. And you can get impatient. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I hear stories from people who, feel they're very diligent, feel like they're doing a very good job, don't get much in terms of negative feedback. And by the way, the word feedback, stop treating people like they're just idiots. Like some of the language we use is so paternalistic and patronizing. You know, the word shouldn't be, you know, shouldn't use language that's about getting someone to be more obedient. You know, let them loose, let the fire in the mouth. That's what I'm talking about, Yanni. You know what I'm talking about. You got a lot of fire in you. HR language, it's really... It's going to hurt people who do creative jobs as HR and corporations try to gather more creative minds into their midst. So many opinions today. I apologize. Now, for people who, you know, I hear stories from people who feel that they're on a similar level to a colleague and that colleague doesn't look like them and their colleague seems to be getting ahead, getting promotions, sometimes maybe without even asking for them. And they feel that the performance is very similar and yet they, have to ask and they get delayed. There's a bit of avoidance going on.
Yeah.
And these are subjective points of view. These are stories that come from the individual's perception of their experience.
Right.
When you hear these kinds of stories, how do you help someone navigate?
Sure. Well, it stinks. It totally stinks. But business is, they're in the business of getting the most energy out of you for the least amount of money that they can. And your job, that's their job, and your job is to get the most money out of them for the energy you're willing to exchange. So if you've been spending a lot of energy kind of like up against the same wall or doing the same activities over and over again, I always suggest they change the door they're knocking on. So again, I go back to a network and I say, okay, now we're going to introduce you to somebody who's in biz dev. At your agency, you've been working on a client, you've been doing great, you're feeling kind of stifled, you're feeling like, you know, there's not a shine on your penny anymore. I'm going to introduce you to somebody in biz dev, or I tell them to do it. If I don't know somebody, I'm not always opening doors for everybody. I'm like, go find the person who's doing biz dev at like a director level and tell them you'll do anything next time something comes in through the door. Mm. And, you know, just change your, who's got eyes on you. And change your dance moves again. Change your stories. I think that sometimes you can just feel like really worn down by doing the same thinking over and over again on the same category. One of the delightful things about this industry and about status in this industry is breadth of experience. And there's so much, you know, it's not just advertising, it's marketing, it's not just B2C, it's B2B, it's not just like, you know, telecom, it's pharma. Like you can, there's so much to learn and they're all so different. Mm. And then if you're not feeling it, right, and it's legit, I think we move too fast sometimes and staying still really is the move. To see what happens next. We're so programmed to hustle all the time. Sometimes it just serves us to just see what happens next, to just watch and see what happens next, even through the frustration. Mm. I don't know, listening to my own self when I'm angry at work, it's usually because I'm not being recognized. And so then I investigate, why do I need to be recognized, right? Can I just sit with a quiet place for a while? Can I get this recognition in another forum? You know, like I investigate also with folks their part in all the problems too. That's part of professional maturity that comes, but it's not easy. I know sometimes I'm feeling like, damn nation, do they know who the hell I am? They're not listening to this, you know?
Yeah. It's natural.
It's totally natural.
And the thing is, like, recognition is something most people in some kind of creative industry need and want. It's a human need, most humans, unless you're sociopaths.
Yeah.
And when you're managing people, you're able to do that. It's really simple. You're in a meeting and someone asks you a question and you know that someone else has done the work and you're like, hey, Yanni, you did that amazing work. Do you want to answer this question? Like, it's really not difficult. And yet,
it's not.
Of people being in rooms and that never happens. Or being excluded from the room where that does happen.
Yes.
Or could
happen. Yes. Yeah. And you can always leave, too. You know, like, don't take your fine self someplace else. Mm. You know, like, kid, we have to recognize that we are the commodity. That our energy is the transaction here, right? And if it's not going your way, if it's really not serving you, take your fine self someplace else.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yanni, if people want to find out more about your thinking on this topic or maybe see if you're up for mentoring them, what's the best way to find out about your thinking and to contact you?
YanniWestcottPlanner.com. And there's a contact me page.
Awesome. Isn't it nice to kind of be in an industry long enough to realize that maybe part of the reason you stayed in the industry is to try to pass it on, try to help other people out. It's
right.
Kind of a cool thing, right?
It's so much fun. It really is. It really is. When I first started in this industry, I thought that, well, first of all, I came in by way of research. And I thought that only famous people or people in movies worked in advertising. You know, I didn't think it was allowed for somebody like me. So I'm so thankful that there is this to do. It uses my skills and passions just better than I could have hoped for. And I don't know what I'd be doing if there wasn't this to do, this thinking work, this disciplined thinking, and then, you know, rampant, rambunctious possibilities. There wasn't that two sides of my brains that I could use. I don't know what I'd be folding sweaters or something like.
Yanni, keep going. The world needs more of this. Congrats on that shift that you've so passionate about, and I hope people look up yanniwescottplanner.com to find out how to get some more of your knowledge. Thank you for joining me on Sweathead today.
Thanks so much, Mark. It's a pleasure.
Peace.